Hello, welcome to the fifth season of Record of Change. My name is Hui Tran and I am going to be your host for this episode. Record of Change features the stories of individuals across the world about how the COVID-19 pandemic has shaped and affected their lives. We listen to our interviewees at several points in time as we want to know about how their lives are changing. I am speaking to you from Duisburg, Germany, where lockdown measures have been loosening and life has been slowly showing signs of getting back to normal as the number of vaccinated people increases. In this episode, we will reunite with Karina Rother, a German freelance journalist based in Taipei, Taiwan. In our last talk with Karina, she described that while the majority of the world has been facing new waves of infections, life in Taiwan was relatively utopian, as if the pandemic has passed. However, we share a skepticism about how long could Taiwan hold up such a situation. By the time that this episode was recorded in late June 2021, Taiwan has actually been experiencing the worst outbreak since 2020, with thousands of new infection cases being recorded. Stricter regulations have also been introduced, and the rolling out of vaccines has become a pressing matter. Karina will share with us the current situation in Taiwan, how securing vaccine doses has been politicized, and how she managed to visit her family in Germany during a global pandemic. Welcome back, Karina, and thank you for joining us on Record of Change. And I am super happy to be able to catch up with you again. It has been a few months since the last time that we talked. You were in Taiwan, in Taipei at that time. And then I still remember being very jealous with your situation back then about living in kind of like a post-pandemic society where everything was very normal and the life seems to be very comfortable. How is the situation at the moment?
Well, thank you, Hui, for having me back. I'm super excited as well to be able to catch up. And you're right, it was a bit of a utopian situation in Taiwan for a long time. And then, unfortunately, in mid-May, the pandemic caught up with us. We had some kind of spillover from a quarantine hotel where flight attendants and pilots were being quarantined, and then staff members got infected, and it hadn't been noticed. And then within a week or so, there were appearing more and more clusters all over the country. That was mid-May, and they sort of caught onto it a bit too late. And so for a week or 2 weeks, the numbers of daily reported infections just were rising constantly. When the outbreak was detected, they started at around 100, which for Taiwan is incredibly high, the highest number of local cases that they'd had since April 2020. Had been two. That was extremely high. That was already pandemic for us. But now they were having 100 cases, and then the next day 200, and then the next day 400. And it was really, really scary because we had not been through that experience that the rest of the world had been through, and we didn't know what that meant. Everyone got really scared, and the government reacted with fairly harsh measures. So within a day or two of the detection of the outbreak, they announced a 2-week lockdown light, I would call it. So basically, like my gym had to close, or swimming pools, schools, obviously, and you were not allowed to go anywhere, not even on the street by yourself without a mask. And that every shop, every doctor's office, anything you entered, you had to report your contact details. They introduced an app pretty quickly, so it became streamlined very quickly. It basically turned from pre-pandemic life or post-pandemic life, just normal life, to Yeah, a ghost town in the matter of a day or two. And it was scary for us because we were driving through the city, seeing all the shops closed, and no people on the street. And we were like, wow, is this what the world has been experiencing for the past year? It was really scary. Yeah.
But wasn't there any lockdown measures back in 2020?
Not to the same extent. They hadn't closed gyms, for example. Gym was still in operation, or they hadn't closed restaurants. And this time, when the pandemic came around, or when the cases started to appear, they closed. It was takeout only.
Mm.
Yeah. And it was the first time we experienced this kind of lockdown. We really felt there is no space but our own flat. Like, they've taken away all public spaces that we can be in.
So you have to wear a mask all the time?
Yeah, Taiwan is quite hardcore with rules like that. So yeah, even when you were in a park at 11 at night by yourself, police could still walk up to you and tell you to put your mask on if you weren't wearing it. But I think it's just a sign of we're sticking to the rules, or we're being careful. Mm. It's sort of, you don't think anymore what is really sensible and what isn't. It was scary for us, but at the same time, it wasn't anything new. It was what the rest of the world had been experiencing. And the difference was that Taiwan sort of closed down so quickly and reacted so quickly and kept extending their lockdown light. As far as I know, currently it's extended until the end of June, and it might get extended again, but the case numbers are already going down.
And then there is a possibility that lockdown is going to be extended.
Mm-hmm. They don't call it lockdown. They have a scale of 1 to 4 of sort of emergency level or alert level, and we're at 3 now. 4 would be even harsher. 4 would be you can only go out with permission or for like necessary errands. So a really severe lockdown. Currently, it's not that severe. So currently, you can move freely. This emergency state 3 has been extended, and it gets extended bi-weekly. So yeah, we'll learn soon if it's going to be extended into July as well. But even though we're still at around 100 infections a day, 100 detected infections, obviously there's a high sort of probably number of infections that don't get detected. But the R value, the curve of how many people get infected through an infected person, has been going down drastically.
I see. As far as I am aware, by May this year, some of the countries, for example, the US, have been seeing lives gradually going back to some kind of like normality, and some other countries in Europe as well. And then on the other hand, in Taiwan, it's the opposite directions. So how do people in Taiwan react to this?
I feel that the level of acceptance is quite high. I feel they approve of this almost preemptive measure, because the ratio of infected people per 100,000 inhabitants or something is still nowhere near what we've seen in Europe. I think it's at 5.5 now per 100,000, whereas in Germany, currently it's at 25, and that's a really good value. Mm. So Taiwan, it was really preemptively or just really early on lockdown, and I think the public approves of that. I also think that Taiwanese society in general is just more, I would say, disciplined or more willing to go along with measures like that. I don't know of any like collective resistance or protests. I mean, the economic effects have been quite harsh.
Hmm.
Taiwan is full of small business owners, like anyone who wants to basically not work for a company, they'll open a little restaurant, or they'll sell stuff, or they'll repair watches or stuff like that. And you have all these small shops that had to close now. And so they are really suffering. I would say sort of lower middle class people, or maybe upper working class people are bearing the brunt. And I personally feel that Taiwan's social support network, like the money that they're offering to keep people in jobs or to help them alleviate the financial burden, it's just not enough. Taiwan is always handing out very small sums. I can't call the exact numbers right now, but compared to Europe, it's really just, as we say in German, a drop of water on a hot stone.
Mm. Yeah. Yeah, the same thing is happening in Japan. So they have like additional relief package or financial package, or they would give sums of money to entrepreneurs or to restaurant owners, for example. But still, the financial damage is still too big. And then such additional support is nothing near the financial damage that these people have to suffer.
I think the only advantage that Taiwan has in economic terms is that it's not affecting its production and it's not affecting its exports, because the rest of the world has already recovered to sort of almost normal consumption levels. And so it's really just the small business owner inside the country that are suffering, but not the bigger export-oriented companies.
Yeah, or the export industry is still functioning.
Yeah,
I see. Yeah, but talking to you just reminds me of Vietnam, where I'm from, because it's exactly the same situation. If I remember it correctly, for a few months already that we have a spillover. And from then, it was basically the biggest outbreaks from the beginning of 2020. Now we are seeing like thousands of cases. Of course, it is nothing in comparison to other countries, as you said, but for countries that had seen like so small a number of infections before, even 1,000 cases is big enough. And then that is very scary. So it's more like a trend. Countries that seems not to be that much affected in 2020s are now seeing the spike in cases number by 2021. Yeah.
Yeah, I'd be interested in knowing whether these harsh measures in Vietnam have had the desired results, whether sort of zero COVID has been reached again afterwards.
Not yet. So basically, even though they have harsh measure, but there are several factors at play. So first of all, the authorities said there is a new virus variant, which is more infectious. And second of all, several of the cluster have been taken place in factories, where basically factory workers work very closely to each other. So it was even harder to control it.
We had the same pattern. And obviously the biggest worry now is that you can contain the outbreak, but you can't get it back to zero.
And the way that I am seeing this is that basically why the rest of the world has been sort of living in a harder lockdown measure since last year until relatively recent. Vietnam is now entering, let's say, the hard lockdown measures from 2020. So they are now really experiencing what it is like living in a very harsh lockdown situations, and people are not very happy about it. I think that would be quite the same situation in Taiwan.
Yeah. And I mean, you have the same or a very similar climate to Taiwan. So currently, yeah, obviously, it's the worst.
It's very hot. Exactly. Yeah.
It's the worst time to be cooped up in your apartment and just with the air conditioning on and not being able to move because you feel like a fly in the heat. It's bad. It's bad. I mean, obviously, the fact that there's been done so much research done on the virus right now and on the way to treat it, that gives Taiwan an advantage over like Europe a year ago. And the fact that there are vaccines available, I do think that, yeah, we're in a better position than the rest of the world was when the outbreak started, but it's still pretty hard or annoying. Mm.
How is the situation of rolling out the vaccinations in Taiwan at the moment?
Obviously, now with the outbreak, there is a big rush. towards vaccines. In the beginning, they started vaccinating in March, late March, early April. And in the beginning, people eligible were really, really slow to get their vaccines. Like, they didn't feel there was a big need. They didn't fully trust the vaccine. And they even had to open up 10,000, 20,000 doses for self-payers so that they could give them out before they expired to people who weren't in the eligible group, just to make sure that the vaccine gets used at all. But then obviously, the minute the outbreak started, there was a giant rush for the vaccines. And Taiwan simply didn't have the capacity, like it wasn't streamlined enough to give them out quickly enough. And it also didn't have the doses that were needed, because with the low interest in getting vaccinated in the beginning, the 100,000 or so doses that they were getting a month were almost too much. And now, obviously, millions of people want to get the vaccine or need to get the vaccine because they're high-risk groups or they're working in hospital environments. Now, Taiwan is experiencing a big pressure to get their vaccines in time because, for several political reasons, they can't get all the vaccines that they want. They can't pre-order all of them. And then the pre-order doses can't all be shipped out immediately, obviously. So Taiwan has secured 20 million doses from Moderna and AstraZeneca and COVAX, but only received a fraction of those up to now. And then they have had, I think, around 3 million doses in donations promised by the US and Japan. And then they have two locally developed vaccines as well, but they haven't entered production stage yet. So all in all, they have lined up 30 million doses, but delivered have only been 5 million doses. And it gets more chaotic if you take in the Pfizer-BioNTech controversy. I don't know if you know anything about that. Pfizer-BioNTech obviously is a German-American co-production, isn't it? But parts of the investments in the company or in the research of the vaccine were Chinese. And there is a Chinese supplier responsible for the Asian region. Fuzon is their name, Fuzon Pharmaceutics. And obviously, Taiwan has a very strained relationship with China due to the fact that China lays claims on Taiwan. Taiwan is de facto a sovereign state, but the relationship is difficult. And Taiwan can't go through official channels. It's not a member of the WHO. It's not a member of the UN. So it can't basically just say, oh, we're a country like every other country and we have the same right to receive these doses. So they were negotiating with Pfizer-BioNTech for months, and they had almost, or they had basically reached an agreement over the purchasing of 5 million doses. This was in January. And then hours after they had already pre-written the press release that we have reached a deal and stuff, the Pfizer side said, no, sorry, there's a problem with the wording. You can't have the word country in the Chinese press release. And Taiwan said, okay, we'll just change it to Taiwan. We won't write our country has secured the doses. And then that wasn't okay either. And so now this deal has been frozen since January for months and months. And obviously by now, this information has come out through Taiwan's health ministry. Like, they were very cautious in the beginning, but sort of were more open and giving bits and bits of information about this process out. Then it seemed to be moving. It seemed like Pfizer-BioNTech were going to sign the deal, but as far as I'm informed, as of now, there has been no agreement reached over the doses yet. And obviously, the implication is that there were internal interference in the BioNTech, Pfizer, Fuzon enterprise that made it more difficult for Taiwan to get its vaccines.
It sounds terrible, actually. And then this is where I feel very discomfort, this whole vaccination distribution thing. It has been so politicized. And once things are politicized, I don't think many good outcomes can come out.
Yeah.
Yeah.
It's exactly what Taiwan is always saying, because Taiwan, every year it has this fight to get, as an observer, to get a seat at the WHA, the Central Assembly of the World Health Organization. They never get it due to internal pressure, due to China saying we represent all of China, basically, and they say Taiwan is part of China. So it can't be there as an observer, and they always put out statements saying, but health is a human right. Access to information is a human right, and you should be able to leave politics aside and just take care of the people affected. But in our imperfect world, that's not
the case. That is not the case. Yeah. So how does Taiwan roll out the vaccination? So does it have like priority groups based on age or occupation like in other countries, or how is the situation there?
Yes, both. I think there are 8 or 9 levels of priority based on the same factors like age, health, and occupation. And then currently these groups are being vaccinated. I was lucky enough to get one of the 20,000 self-paid vaccine doses that they opened up before the outbreak started. And within 2 days after opening them up, all the spots were taken. But wow. I was lucky enough to act fast and get a spot. Yeah.
Yeah.
And for me and my partner who aren't from Taiwan, who want to be able to go home, who maybe want to be able to cut down their quarantine time, it just feels very urgent. To get
exactly,
I'm sure it's the same for you. I'm sure you want to go home and see your family.
Yeah, but the point is, even if I am vaccinated now, I still have to do 21 days of quarantine if I'm about to travel back to Vietnam.
Yeah, in Taiwan, there's currently also 21 days, but there are 2 weeks of quarantine. In your home, you're not allowed to leave your home, or if you come from certain high-risk areas like the UK or India or Brazil, then you have to go into centralized quarantine facilities. Otherwise, you can stay at home. And then you have 7 more days of self-health management where you observe your health, and then you're sort of allowed to fully live your life again. And they were floating the idea of reducing quarantine for vaccinated people to maybe a week or 5 days. But with the current outbreak, it has not been announced or sort of pursued yet.
So what was the first thing that you planned after getting your first dose of vaccination?
Going home to Germany. Yeah. We were lucky because we had the vaccination early in May, and then by early June, I was able to travel home. And it was important for me to have at least some sense of protection, because apart from my brother, no one in my family has been vaccinated, and my grandparents are around 90, and I just wanted to protect them as much as I could.
Mm. Right now, you're talking to us from Germany.
Yes, exactly. Southern Germany, Regensburg.
How does it feel like being home after such a long time?
I was surprised by how quickly it became normal again. Like for the first 3 to 5 days, I was a bit disoriented because I hadn't come home all throughout the pandemic. And in my head, I had this idea of, okay, Germany is a really dangerous place and you can basically catch corona at any corner. And I was wearing my face shield and everything. And I was just smirking at people who took off their mask outside the shop and stuff like that. But yeah, I didn't know what to do with it because I really hadn't experienced any of it, and like going through the airports and everything. I mean, it must have been the same for you when you were going from Japan to Germany, but going through the airports and everything, I just felt there was immediate danger everywhere. And then after living in Germany for a few days, I realized, okay, life is fairly normal with some exceptions, and you can't necessarily catch corona just by walking down the street. Like, there are usually sort of infection events, and if you avoid them, then you're at least a bit safer.
Yeah.
I adjusted more quickly. Right now, when I go out on the street or through the building or anything, I just don't put on a mask. I have it in my pocket. And so I do it now like the rest of Germany does it. But the first few days, like you described, coming from Asia, I think it's just this attitude of, one, you don't want to offend anyone. You want to protect everyone. Like in the Asian countries, it's just so habitual to keep your mask on as a sign of I'm being respectful, I'm being careful. And also now Taiwan has a policy that you really always have to wear it the minute you leave your door. And so the first few days in Germany, I felt really weird walking down the street without a mask on, or when I went running in the morning with no one there. Obviously, I was wondering, should I put it on or not? It felt weird. But it's also, Taiwan is so dense, population density is so high,
right,
people are crammed together in the cities, and you get in such close contact. And here in my hometown, you walk anywhere and you basically have 2 meters around you, and you're not, it's just much more spread out. It's a different situation.
Yeah, I'm glad that you are feeling very great now in Germany and being able to visit the families and the loved ones and not having to wear a mask all the time.
Yeah. I got the best of both worlds.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah, I got to sit out the pandemic in Taiwan, and now that it's
and then now in come down a little bit in Germany.
Yeah,
when you talk to your family, how do they react to the current situation or the decrease in infection cases?
In Germany?
Mm-hmm.
I think it depends on who you talk to. My brother, who has been taking the measures fairly seriously, so he doesn't have contact with older people from my family regularly, but he has still been quite careful and doing tests before he comes to visit and stuff like that. My dad is sort of staunch libertarian, so he believes it's an infringement on his rights that he is being pressured to get vaccinated. He wants to be in control of what's being put in his body. Mm. And he feels he doesn't want anyone poking around his nose. So he's never done a PCR test, and he is not getting vaccinated, and he feels strongly that his rights are being violated by certain offers only being made to vaccinated people. He feels he doesn't want to be pressured into that.
Yeah.
Which is interesting to me. Like, I didn't even blink before saying, oh, yes, I want that vaccination spot. Like, I was so happy to get it.
Yeah.
And he's 63, so he's not, I mean, he's healthy, but he's not in a not high risk group in a sense. But I sort of have to respect his opinion, I think. And it reflects the difference in living circumstances as well. He lives by himself in a house in the countryside with a big garden. He has his own car. He only visits like a handful of people in his social life. And so obviously, why would he feel the need to get vaccinated? So in a sense, I've learned to understand that perspective a bit better now that I'm seeing it play out in Germany. Whereas before, I was quite angry about it. And I mean, we need to break the infection chain, and we do that by getting vaccinated. But at the same time, in a democracy, people should be able to have that opinion, and we have to find a way to integrate both standpoints.
I feel the same. And I think every individual opinions should be valued and respected, as long as the decisions to be vaccinated or not make some sense.
Yeah. It's difficult. I think there are legitimate criticisms of COVID policy or important discussions to be had about civil rights. And then there is the territory of demonizing the pharma industry or demonizing the medical field, and like narratives that are actually culturally, historically, deeply rooted in parts of Germany, and especially here in the South. The pandemic is almost an opportunity to look at these narratives and be like, where do they come from? Why are they so effective? Why do people feel so left behind by our medical system that they turn to alternative medicines rather than doing what protects themselves and others? If we want to look at it from an analytical point of view, then it's very interesting. But if we look at it from a personal point of view, then it's really quite infuriating and upsetting.
Exactly.
How much ignorance there is.
So, last question. What is the future plan for now? Or I guess that you're going to spend at least some time in Germany before going back to Taiwan.
Yeah, I had such luxury of being able to spend 6 weeks in Germany. And I'm going to return to Taiwan mid-July. And then I have to somehow survive 2 weeks of quarantine locked in our very hot flat, which is also very noisy, and trying to work even though I can't leave the house. These sorts of things. But I mean, yeah, it's fairly familiar to everyone right now who's been traveling internationally. I'll be back in Taiwan, hopefully at a time where the outbreak has slowed down enough to get some sense of normal life back. Yeah.
Yeah. Let's hope that by the time that you get back to Taiwan, things has come down a bit. Well, I'm glad that we have a very nice talk. I'm very, very sorry that even though we are in the same country, we couldn't do this talk directly. But let's hope that we would be somehow sitting in a beer garden, either in Germany or in Taiwan, somehow, someday, and soon, yeah, when we are fully vaccinated.
Yes, I'm looking forward to that. Thank you so much for talking to me today. It's been a real pleasure.
You have just listened to the first episode in Season 5 of Record of Change. We hope you enjoy. Stay tuned for the next episode, in which we will catch up with Catherine, a transportation engineer in Washington, D.C. in the U.S., who has been volunteering at the COVID testing site since last year. You can listen to past episodes from the series by following us on your favorite podcast app. If you like what you hear, please leave a review and subscribe to our feed or share the podcast with your network. This podcast is implemented with and by members of the Bosch Alumni Network, a community that brings together former and current fellows, grantees, and staff members of the Robert Bosch Stiftung and its partners.